You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox from Pro Football Focus and BearsWire.com, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. And I'm here, as always, to help get you through this downtime of the NFL offseason, and today we're continuing our early look ahead at the Chicago Bears schedule for 2018. We're on to the New England Patriots in week 7. The Bears will face arguably the toughest test on their schedule when they get to this game, at least the toughest test so far on their schedule, and we will be joined by our friend of the show, Mark Schofield, host of Locked On Patriots here on the Locked On Podcast Network. You've heard him on this podcast before, and he'll help us break down a lot of the sort of off-the-field drama that's kind of going on with the Patriots and Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and a lot of messiness there that we can kind of, you know, parse through as much as we can here. This is one of those teams on the schedule that's really going to push the Bears, and you know, you look at it on paper, and I don't think you'll find too many people that are expecting Chicago to get the win against the New England Patriots, at least today in June when we're recording this, that on paper, you know, it's impossible to predict games at this point. But based on what we know about these two teams and what these two teams have proven on the field recently, the New England Patriots are obviously the superior team. But I think this podcast and in our conversation with Mark Schofield might help us try and get a better understanding of maybe just how far behind the Bears might be, and maybe just how potentially, you know, indestructible or destructible this New England Patriots team is this year, especially compared to some previous years. You know, they're coming off of the Super Bowl loss, and we've seen teams struggle in the years to follow. I mean, the Patriots have lost Super Bowls before and been fined, but that was before Tom Brady was a 40-year-old quarterback, and that was before the trade rumors would swirl about their top players, and, you know, there was that big ESPN article last year. I mean, a lot of stuff has gone on with the New England Patriots. There's been some changes in terms of roster and free agency and a couple trades they made, and obviously the NFL draft, so it's going to be a slightly different-looking New England Patriots team, and I think based on some of the off-the-field stuff this offseason, it's just going to feel like a slightly different New England Patriots team, and there's no better person to update us on what's going on in Foxborough than our guest today. Joining us now on Locked On Bears is Mark Schofield. He is a friend of the show, a guest on here multiple times. You might also know him from Locked On Patriots, where he is the host, but he also writes for Inside the Pylon and Pro Football Weekly. You can follow him on Twitter at Mark Schofield. That's S-C-H-O-F-I-E-L-D. Mark, how are you this evening?
Mr. Cox, my friend, how have you been doing this fine, lovely summer?
You know, it's been a blast. I know, I think you're kind of getting some of this too with this time of year. It's the dead part of the off season. It can be a little bit of a grind, but that's why we do things like this, to talk football and really help pass the time.
It does help pass the time. Although, I mean, over at Locked On Patriots, man, I've been talking about movies. I've been talking about, like, but it's like, you know, when we try to do these things, you know, every day or so, it's like, what do you talk about in June? I mean, but we try. We forge on. That's why we do this, because we love it.
And that's why we're talking Patriots today on the Locked On Bears podcast.
There you go. It all makes sense in the end.
Yeah, we're going week by week here through a lot of the, you know, all the teams on the Bears schedule. We skip Green Bay for week 1 because they play them twice. We'll come back. But the other teams that we've gone through so far, you know, Seattle, Arizona, Tampa Bay, even Miami last episode, these are all teams, you know, we talked to the hosts and the analysts. We had, you know, Trevor Sikkema for the Buccaneers. And all these guys are talking about how their teams maybe aren't, you know, solidified and a sure thing, but those are four teams in a row with a bye week in there that are all pushing for a wild card playoff spot, kind of in the same picture as the Bears. And I think we get to New England here, and it's the first team that's kind of like the big boy team. I mean, what's sort of the general feel about this team. I know there's been the drama with what's going on with Tom Brady and the no comment and pleading the fifth about whether he feels appreciated or whatever. And the Belichick, you know, the rumors with that are always swirling. We never really quite get a straight answer. But is there a certain level of uneasiness around Patriots fans, or do they get this feeling that, like, well, it's Tom Brady, it's Bill Belichick, they'll figure it out?
Unease is perhaps the perfect word to describe it. And it's the – I've been basically calling it the off-season of unease basically since Super Bowl 52 ended, because, you know, and let's take a step back beyond Super Bowl 52 for a minute, because we remember that Wickersham story that came out, I think it was November on a Friday, where he was reporting that there was this, you know, move to trade Garoppolo, and then, you know, Kraft intervened, and, you know, Brady wanted to know his future with the team, but there was a deal in place, and all of that stuff started. And Patriots fans, by their very nature, Boston fans actually, by their very nature, more accurately, tend to be very, shall we say, sensitive, or perhaps overly sensitive. But there was that blowback right away. And it's because all of us in the back of our minds have this fear that the Brady era is ending sooner rather than later. And that's sort of been the undercurrent to everything that has happened since then. You know, the team loses Super Bowl 52, and even though Brady goes out and plays an incredible game, I mean, threw for a ridiculous amount of yardage and a loss, there's that. There's the Gronkowski unease, where he says after the game that he's going to have to think about whether he wants to come back. Both those guys don't report for the voluntary stuff during the off-season program, although they come in for the mandatory stuff. So there's that going on, and that's still sort of simmering when, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, Adam Kirchen, formerly of the Boston Herald, has a report where, you know, the team had a deal in place potentially to trade Gronkowski to either the Titans or 49ers. And that was also hit with the same type of blowback. Now, I know Adam. He's a friend of mine. I talked to him that day, and he swears by that story. And slowly over time, even though Robert Kraft himself came on record to say it was hogwash, bits and pieces have been confirmed, whether it was, you know, the team shopping Gronkowski, whether it was they had a deal in place. You know, Adam reported that, you know, Brady intervened in that one and said, if you trade him, I'm done. I'm retiring. And that hasn't been confirmed. But still, as other pieces to that get confirmed, it makes you think there really is something there. And so it has been a very unsettling type of offseason. And we've seen this before with teams that when they get to a Super Bowl and lose, it's often tougher to then get back to a Super Bowl for the losing team rather than it is for the team that wins to get back to the playoffs, because, you know, so many things happen to you when you lose a Super Bowl. Sometimes it takes a while to get over that. Look at the Carolina Panthers a couple of seasons ago. They lose a Super Bowl. They took forever to sort of get over that. And so until this team gets back on the field and starts winning games again, there's going to be that unease.
Well, you know, we saw them at least try and, you know, wash it away a little bit this offseason, and they made some changes, you know, minor, I think, in compared to some other franchises, including the Bears, on both sides of the ball here. And I want to touch on some of the bigger ones now. I think the one that I always point to here is this offensive line. You lose Nate Solder at the left tackle position. One of the, you know, I think he struggled a little bit this past year and maybe wasn't as great as he's always been, but one of the better, more consistent left tackles over the last 5+ years. It's tough to find quality replacements like that. I know Bill Belichick is never one to keep a guy too long. It's always, you know, get rid of him too early. But, you know, they brought in LaAdrian Waddle, or they've had LaAdrian Waddle kind of already in the place. And then they drafted Isaiah Wynn in the first round. Is he going to potentially stay at left tackle like he did at college? Or is Waddle going to take over at left tackle? And I guess how much of a downgrade do you see at that, you know, the supposed key position on the offensive line, the blindside protector?
Yeah, and, you know, let's put this in the bucket in the context that it requires, of that your quarterback's about to turn 41 in about a month. And as good as Tom Brady is and as adept as he is at keeping himself upright and moving and sliding around in the pocket, he's not mobile, but he's got good footwork, and there's the ability to move and slide and to keep himself upright in the pocket and avoid hits. That's what makes him play the game so well at such an advanced age. I can say that because I'm a couple of months older than Brady. I can say he's old because I am too. But you still need to protect him. Now, when this team went through OTAs and minicamp and stuff, it was actually Trent Brown who they acquired during a draft week trade with the 49ers, that was getting the bulk of the reps at that left tackle spot, with Wynn kicked inside at left guard. So that was your starting left side for most of the offseason program, was Brown at left tackle, Wynn at guard. Now, this is an organization that will try Wynn at left tackle, and if he sticks there, they'll keep him there. And Dante Scarnecchia, you know, a seasoned veteran offensive line coach who has done wonders for this offensive line over the years. You know, after the draft, during rookie minicamp, he told reporters, he said, look, a lot of people said he's a guard because of his length, but, you know, Matt Light, who was all-pro, you know, Pro Bowl-type left tackle for us for years in New England, he had short arms too, arms were the same size. It's not the length of the arms, but it's how you use them. And so they're going to try him at left tackle. And if he sticks there, he might be their starting left tackle week one. And let's not forget, this was a guy that played left tackle in the SEC. It's not like he's coming out of, say, you know, Division II or Division III, and he's got short arms. This is a guy that was a left tackle in the SEC going up against some decent pass rushers. So if he can have the footwork and the technique to still be effective at the left tackle spot in the NFL, he might be your week one tackle. If not, that's why they got Trent Brown, because they're not sold on Adrian Waddle. He's more your swing tackle type guy. I don't think they want to move Marcus Cannon over to left tackle. He was very effective for them at right tackle. And so I think they're going to try between Wynn and Brown, figuring those two out. I think Wynn's talented enough that if he can't hold up at left tackle, they'll kick him inside to guard. Joe Thuney was perhaps, if I want to identify a weak link on that offensive line, he was probably that guy last year. But I think that's going to be where it comes down to Trent Brown, Isaiah Wynn at that left tackle spot. And it will still be a downgrade. And like you said, Lauren, you know, Solder maybe missed some blocks last year. He was generally solid, you know, and he got paid big money because a solid to above average to, you know, Pro Bowl type left tackle is a valuable commodity in today's NFL. You know, but the issue is the Patriots weren't going to pay him what they needed. You know, and he needed to be in a situation where he needed to be in an environment where, because of the health of his son who's going through, you know, a difficult cancer, you know, treatment program, they needed to be in an environment where they could have that taken care of. And, you know, New York made sense for them. But it will be a bit of a downgrade at first. But I think eventually, especially if it's Wynn, he could grow into a Nate Solder type tackle, or perhaps more accurately, given the arm size issue, a Matt Light type tackle.
Well, speaking of rookies in the starting lineup, over on the Locked On NFL Draft podcast, Trevor Sikkema and John Ledyard, two guests on this podcast multiple times, they've been breaking down the potential impact of each team's rookie class entering in this year. And earlier this week, they hit the NFC North and, of course, the beloved Chicago Bears. And I think you'll want to check out that episode. They talked about specifically some of Anthony Miller's game and how he could fit in a role in sort of this rotation with Taylor Gabriel, and who's going to be the number two, who's going to be the number three, you know, who's better in the slot, who's better outside. And, you know, they also touch on, of course, you know, James Daniels and Roquan Smith and all the rookies, at least those first three that are for sure going to make immediate impacts in Chicago. And I highly recommend, I feel like I say it all the time, the Locked On NFL Draft podcast. If you like the NFL draft, you got to listen to my guys, Trevor and John, breaking down the NFL draft all year long. It's Locked On NFL Draft here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We're talking New England Patriots here with Mark Schofield from Locked On Patriots. Mark, this Patriots wide receiver group is always one that seems to get production kind of out of nowhere. There's always another person that jumps into that role. And, you know, now Brandon Cooks was traded to Los Angeles with the Rams, and Danny Amendola signed with the Miami Dolphins. So, you know, a couple of guys, you know, not the Julian Edelman of the offense, but a couple of kind of key complementary pieces. They're out of the picture. Jordan Matthews comes over from Buffalo. I know he's kind of viewed as a potential sleeper in this group, but where do you see, I mean, besides the obvious Julian Edelman being, you know, the receiver he is, where do you see the production coming from the wide receiver position in this offense besides Edelman?
I mean, arguably, you know, given all the questions and unease and all that stuff, this might be the million-dollar question facing the Patriots this offseason, because let's not forget, Edelman's facing a four-game suspension as well. And you're talking about a team that starts against Houston and then against Jacksonville. You know, and if you're losing Julian Edelman, especially against that Jacksonville defense, you're going to need to find, you know, replacement production sooner rather than later. You know, assuming that suspension gets upheld, it's in the appeals process right now. I think Hogan and Jordan Matthews are probably going to see the bulk of run, you know, at those two receiver spots. And then I'd look at a guy like Malcolm Mitchell, who was lost all last year due to injury, you know, with a knee injury. But when you go back to Super Bowl 51, you rewatch that game. There were a number, there are two that stick directly in my mind, of third down throws, or perhaps it was due to coverage and whether the coverage was rotated towards other guys or whatnot. And Brady looked right at Malcolm Mitchell in a big spot in that game, at least twice, if not more. And when you're doing that with a rookie, you know, Tom Brady doesn't trust a lot of receivers, but he seemed to trust Malcolm Mitchell when Super Bowl 51 was on the line. And so if he gets back healthy, I think he's a guy to watch. Philip Dorsett now with Cooks gone, I think those two were kind of redundant in a way, similar skill sets, although Cooks obviously, you know, I think a better receiver, but there is similar skill sets. Now with Cooks out of the picture, Dorsett might find some more run. You know, Kenny Britt's a name to watch, and I've been talking about him since guys like you turned to me in the stands at Ladd Peebles whenever this kid made a play and said, this guy's going to be a Patriot. Braxton Berrios, because he obviously just screams Patriot. He might not make the team. He's on the outside looking in because it's a crowded receiver room. But the fact that he can contribute on punt returns and things like that with Amendola gone, that might earn him a spot on this team. And he's one of those sleeper type kids that he just fits this offense so well with all the quick little short option juke type routes that he runs so well, that Edelman has run for years, that Amendola ran for years, that Wes Welker ran for years. He's a guy that could probably work his way into the lineup as the fourth type receiver as they get through the season, provided he makes the team. But, you know, it's a crowded wide receiver room right now. The Edelman suspension throws another sort of monkey wrench into it. And then there's Cordell Patterson, who I think that he probably doesn't see a ton of run on the offensive side of the ball, but he's probably your special teams contributor as well. So it's an interesting wide receiver group to watch.
Well, and of course, like, the Patriots offense is never one that relies too heavily on wide receivers to produce in the passing game. You got the tight ends and, right, and the running backs too have always kind of been, at least in recent years, sort of the new development there. And I've been curious to get your thoughts here on how they're going to replace Deion Lewis. Cause I guess this is another one of those $1 million type questions where every year, the questions completely, you know, surround this Patriots running back position as far as who's going to get the bulk of the carries. And, you know, we know James White's a good receiver out of the backfield. Burkhead was getting some goal line stuff and some, and making some nice plays in the passing game as well last year. But then they kind of surprised some people and drafted Sony Michel in the first round. Do you think Belichick's going to put a lot on the rookie in year one, or, you know, Jeremy Hill comes in from the Bengals? It seems like they've got 4 or 5, even maybe 6 guys if you count Brandon Bolden, that should all be potential contributors this year. I mean, how do you kind of parse out where, at least maybe not who's at the top, but who has the better chance than everybody else?
Yeah, if the wide receiver room is sort of the $1 million question, this is like the $999,000 question. It's just a step below that group because it's another crowded positional room. I think when you look at this group and anticipate how it's going to shake out, Brandon Bolden is more of your special teams guy that they like in certain packages as a pass protector. They really trust him, you know, protecting Tom Brady in the backfield. You might see, you know, a drive here or there where they have him solely on the field to block for Tom Brady. You know, so let's put him in one bucket. I think, you know, Burkhead is kind of their running back slash receiving threat. They did a lot last year with him either out of the backfield or motioning him out of the backfield. They did some, you know, packages here and there with run game stuff, mostly outside zone type looks, but they were really using him more as a receiver. And there's something to keep in mind if, you know, they don't get production out of the receiver group with Edelman, you know, facing the suspension. They might look to Burkett as more of a slot type guy and sort of move him outside. So that's something to keep in mind. I think White will probably see the bulk of work at first, and then they're going to bring in Sony Michel, who potentially could be an every down back, you know, as a rookie in the National Football League. I think when you sort of study him, you know, what he can do as a receiver out of the backfield, his effectiveness at running routes out of the backfield, very refined route runner, solid hands as a receiver out of the backfield, and then obviously brings the home run hidden ability that they kind of lost when they lost Deion Lewis. And so those are the names I really keep in mind. Mike Gillisley, obviously when they signed him out of the Buffalo, there was a lot of thought that he might be your every down back for the Patriots. That never seemed to shake out. And they used him sort of as a short yardage guy. And then, as you mentioned, Lauren, you know, then they turned to Burkett for some of that stuff. I think Jeremy Hill is probably just seeing what they can get out of him, just kicking the tires on him. But I think it's really going to be your core guys of White, Burkett, and Sony Michel. You know, as far as trying to predict who gets the bulk of touches, you know, that's, you know, since I started watching the Patriots as a fan in the Belichick era and now covering them, you know, professionally, that's a head scratcher from week to week. I mean, if you can come up with a formula, you know, to predict Belichick's running back usage, you will win a Nobel Prize of some kind. And I'm reminded right now of the people that won the multi-million dollar hit on FanDuel because they had Jonas Gray the night he went out, scored 4 touchdowns against the Colts on a Sunday night game, and then slept through a meeting, slept through his alarm clock, and never saw the field again. I mean, that's how they use the running backs here in New England. It's not just week to week. Sometimes it's drive to drive.
Well, let's take a look over at the defensive side of the ball. Obviously, some changes, from a coaching standpoint with Matt Patricia gone to the Detroit Lions and coming into the NFC North. But, you know, the free agent that had a lot of question marks with him was Malcolm Butler, a guy that joined Matt Patricia, or got an offer from Matt Patricia. Do you remember where he ended up in free agency? Did Tennessee?
I believe it was Tennessee.
Because I remember the Bears tried to sign him, the Lions tried to sign him. He was a guy that, again, didn't play in a Super Bowl, and then had a pretty significant free agent market. You know, they have Jason McCourty brought over from the Browns. They signed Stephon Gilmore a couple years ago in free agency, and then they drafted Duke Dawson in the second round. Do you think, given how things ended with Malcolm Butler, there's not going to be much of a, you know, like they're not going to miss him that much in the sense that had he still been under contract, there might have been some reason to get rid of him anyway? Or how do you expect the changes to take place in the secondary there?
I mean, you know, it's interesting to think about. I think when you look at the history of, you know, how Belichick, you know, handles players near the end of their deals and things like that, you know, it's clear that they usually tend to move on from people rather than overpaying somebody, you know, at a non-quarterback type position. I mean, Brady being sort of the exception, and I think Gronkowski as well, which, you know, is another story perhaps for another time. You know, but I think when you look at the construction of this secondary over the past couple of seasons, and you look at the, you know, personnel packages that they've run out there, they do so much in terms of multiple safety looks where they've got 3, sometimes 4 safeties on the field at a time. And that's, I think, where they're going to tend to go again this year. You look at, you know, they trust Harmon a ton. They trust Devin McCourty a ton. They trust Patrick Chun a ton. Jordan Richards to a similar extent as well. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they rely on those guys because it gives them some positional flexibility, some schematic flexibility where, you know, those guys could be counted on to cover tight ends. They can cover running backs. A couple of them, you know, McCourty being a former cornerback, he can cover wide receivers as well. And so if you face, say, an up-tempo offense or an offense that goes up-tempo with, say, 12 personnel, 2 tight ends, they can use that package and they're not, you know, forced into a situation where their linebackers have to then flex outside, perhaps. And that's the bigger question, I think, facing this defense. And it was something that was sort of exposed at some extent in the AFC Championship game and then certainly in the Super Bowl, where the lack of athleticism at that second level of this defense, particularly when you see misdirection and RPO type stuff, it really sort of hurt them. It will be interesting to see. They get Dont'a Hightower back, not an athletic linebacker, but they were using Hightower as more of an edge guy. That allows them to put him there and have guys like Van Noy, Marquise Flowers, who are more athletic, to sort of be at that second level. They get Derek Rivers back, who can give you some pass up, rush up off the edge as well. You know, so that was interesting from my perspective, trying to see if they were going to draft linebackers that fit that more athletic mold. Perhaps they got that in Christian Sam. They certainly didn't get that in Juwan Bentley, who's more of a 2-down thumper. But that, I think, is the bigger question facing this defense, that second level. Can it be athletic enough for today's offenses to go up against today's schematics that we're seeing with the RPO type stuff? Or will it not be? You know, maybe it won't hurt them. Maybe it will, but that's certainly something to watch.
What about the pass rush up front? You know, I think last year Trey Flowers kind of emerged as a pretty consistent guy there, and Dietrich Weiss got some sacks, but it seemed like from a snap-to-snap pressure perspective, I know from PFF, they didn't get a ton of the hurries that you typically right. see one of the better pass rushing defenses try and do. You know, I know they added Adrian Claiborne from the Falcons, who another guy that had the sack numbers maybe a little bit inflated from that game against the Cowboys yeah, backup. What was that guy even?
Was Gordy Glenn? No, who was it? That's going to bug me. But yeah, I mean, Adrian Claiborne owes his contract to that guy. I mean, he certainly does because what did he have, like 5 sacks in that one game?
Yeah. Was it? No, it wasn't Chaz Green.
Was it Chaz Green? I'm looking at their roster right now, too.
Yeah,
I'm trying
me too.
To figure it out.
We're probably both on the same. Probably both on our
I
heads,
think
right?
It was Chaz Green.
Or was it Byron Bell?
I got to figure this out.
I know, right?
Yeah, Chaz Green and Byron Bell gave up 6 sacks to Adrian Claiborne. So it was both of them. It was like 2 of those guys. Yeah, he got Green on 4 of the 6. Yeah. I mean, you had to feel bad for those guys at the end. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of the pass rush, that's been one of the, you know, underpinning questions facing this defense over the past couple of seasons was the lack of a consistent pass rush. And you hit the nail on the head there where they don't get a ton of hurries, which means – and it's borne out of the numbers, like you said, from PFF. They had to scheme stuff open. You know, they had to scheme blitzes. They had to scheme stuff to get pressure. They couldn't just get it. They couldn't just rush 3 and still hurry the quarterback. They had to use stunts, twists, you know, A-dog, you know, sugar the A-gap and send guys through the A-gap, you know, to get pressure. And so that's another area to watch. The addition of Claiborne will help. Getting Hightower back, who they used as an edge guy, will help. Added Danny Shelton, I think, will help as well because he and, you know, Malcolm Brown, if they go 4-man front, they can occupy more than 1 or 2 blockers up front, you know, which is going to obviously get you some one-on-ones on the outside for, you know, Trey Flowers, for Claiborne, for perhaps Dietrich Wise. And they get Derek Rivers back, which I think is another sort of, you know, underdog types, understated type story for this defense. He was a guy that people loved, you know, 2 years ago down in Mobile. They thought he was perhaps maybe a second, even a late first round guy. He falls to the Patriots in the 3rd round. They lose him for a season due to injury, but now he's coming back. So it's like you're getting an additional 3rd round incoming rookie draft pick. And so I think they're hoping that you put all that stuff together. You won't have to scheme as much stuff in terms of blitzes and stunts to get pressure. You can win some one-on-ones. You can get some quicker pressure, some hurries and things like that. And that, you know, improved pass rush plus the, you know, the faith they have in their secondary, maybe that all works together to sort of mask what sitting here right now at the end of June looks to be, you know, still some lingering concerns over that second level of this defense.
Coming up next here with Mark Schofield from Locked On Patriots, we'll take a bigger picture look at where exactly the Patriots stand now, given some of these potential flaws on the roster and a lot of the off-the-field drama. We'll break down whether or not we should expect some kind of step back this year, as everything seems to be still coming together in New England this offseason. Keep it locked here on Locked On Bears. So when we take like a bigger picture and then even just like look back at what we just talked about, it seems like, you know, still waiting to see who emerges exactly at wide receiver with Edelman suspended, still figuring out the left side of that offensive line, maybe not as much a concern, but still figuring out the running back position and where exactly that's going to come from, still looking for that pass rush to emerge a little bit and wondering if the speed of this defense is going to, and that second level is going to continue to keep up with this NFL. I mean, where does that leave the New England Patriots? Because it just seems like every year there's these question marks, and every year they're answered in one way or another, and the Patriots are back to winning, you know, 12, 13 games, and they win the AFC North, and they get a first-round bye, and they go on a deep playoff run. I mean, is that still the expectation, that is the standard that has to be met this year?
As long as they have number 12 and number 87, you know, I think that there's the expectation that this team is going to win the AFC East. And when you look around the AFC East, do the Jets scare you right now? You know, do the Dolphins really scare you right now? Do the Bills scare you right now? I mean, 2 of those teams are probably looking at a rookie quarterback out of the gate. So, you know, you can make the case it's the worst division in football right now. And they're going to get 6 games against those teams. And so I think you're looking at this team, even with the question marks, the expectations are, look, this is still a 12-4, 13-3 type team. You know, they'll face some tough tests. You know, that week 2 game down in Jacksonville, that's going to be a fascinating game to watch because you know full well that, yeah, Jacksonville has a week 1 opener. You know that team has got that date circled on their calendar. They were 5 minutes away from going to a Super Bowl. They are still talking about Miles Jack, in his knee and how he was not down. And yeah, I mean, you could go to a trivia night at a Jacksonville bar. You could, you know, scroll on Twitter and you will see, you know, Miles Jack's knee wasn't down. Miles Jack wasn't down. They're still hung up on it, and I don't blame them. I don't think it was down. And so you know that's going to be a tough test. So there will be games, there will be tests, there will be some losses along the way. But the expectation in New England is, even with all of this going on, this is still a 12-4 team. This is still a team that's going to win the AFC East, probably by a couple of games given the weakness of the division. And this is a team that's going to make a long playoff run. All of that being said, let's bring it back to where we started, though. Until that starts happening, there's going to be unease. The expectations will still be high, but there's still that lingering fear in the back of every Patriots fan, every Patriots reporter, everybody that's covering this team, is that, look, this goes south soon. Brady goes off that cliff that older quarterbacks tend to go off. This could end badly. And Tom Brady's dad said that years ago. He's like, this will come to an end, and it will end badly. And that sort of mindset is still in the back of all of our minds. So until that all happens, until those games get won, there's going to be that unease we talked about at the beginning.
Well, and of course, by the time the Patriots get to Chicago for their Week 7 game, we'll already have most of these questions answered. We'll know whether the Patriots are full steam ahead, or maybe there's a chance that, you know, some of these teams, they play the Chiefs right before the Bears, that, and even the Colts if Andrew Luck gets back, that one of these teams could maybe, is this the year that you can steal a game against the Patriots, or by after that Jacksonville Jaguars game, are they kind of locked and loaded and rolling through? So it should be, I think that, would you say this is the most interesting Patriots year to watch in terms of like possibilities here, or how does it compare to recent years?
In the short term history, I think so. I think, you know, perhaps the more interesting sort of storyline was like that 2007-2008, you know, the year that they were going to go 16-0, and then, you know, they had Randy Moss. You know, that was a fantastic sort of set of circumstances to watch. And then the next year when they lose Brady week one, you know, and then Matt Cassel out of nowhere leads him to an 11-5 record. But, you know, bar those teams, I think this, given the fact that, you know, the two guys we talked about, you know, Brady and Gronkowski being the guys that as long as they're in the lineup, you know, you get a shot and you should win games, this might be the final ride for them. I mean, who knows? I mean, Brady says he wants to play until he's 45, but, you know, guys like Willie McGinnis, you know, guys that have played with him have intimated that, you know, if he wins a Super Bowl, he might just say, that's it, I'm done. You know, this is it, I'm out. You know, and for Gronkowski, it's just a matter of time until he's in the WWE. You know, and he's looking at this and, you know, he's looking at this, his next NFL contract, as probably his last. And, you know, the thing to remember with Gronkowski is, yeah, he's paid as one of the top tight ends in the league. You know, he's, you know, making, you know, $9 million average on his deal. But the thing that gets to him, and, you know, we can sort of end on this point, is when you talk about the percentage of his contract that's guaranteed, it's just 24%. And there are guys like Niles Paul, 31.6% of his contract is guaranteed. Michael Huamanaui, you know, he doesn't get paid a ton of money, but 36% of it is guaranteed, all the way up to O.J. Howard and all of his contract being guaranteed. So that's the Gronkowski sticking point, is that he gets paid well, but it's not all guaranteed. And if he's got one more NFL contract in him, he wants guaranteed money. Yeah, he's got a second or third or fifth career waiting for him, whether it's, like I said, WWE or, you know, what was he endorsing? I saw him endorse a teeth whitening kit that, I kid you not, it works via USB. And what he does is he plugs it into his Xbox controller or his PS4 controller. And while he plays Fortnite, you've got this thing that basically whitens your teeth. And that's what he's endorsing right now. And I want to try it, Lauren. I have to try this thing. But, you know, he's obviously got business interests and other interests away from the game of football. But if he's got one more contract in him, he wants to maximize the return on it. And so that's sort of the sticking point with him, is probably getting more guaranteed money. But, yeah, I mean, a long-winded way of saying, look, this team should win games. But if those guys, you know, if those guys start to either fall off the cliff like Brady, or if Gronkowski gets hurt again, then who knows what happens.
Well, like you said, this may be the final ride for Tom Brady, yeah. Maybe Bill Belichick, maybe, probably not Rob Gronkowski, but this will certainly not be the final ride for Mark Schofield. He'll be there through thick and thin, through the Danny Etling era to follow Brady in New England.
That's just the thing. If there was a quarterback that the Patriots fan base would have to be saddled with to climb back out of the desert, you know, I've often said that when Brady retires, Patriots fans are going to be back wandering the desert of fandom, because life without Tom Brady is going to be a harsh reality for many of us who, I mean, there are Patriots fans that have never known a bad Patriots team. You know, they don't know that, they don't remember the Tony Eason days, the Steve Grogan, a quarterback wearing a neck roll. I mean, come on, people. That's what we used to have. And so if there was a quarterback to usher us back into that era of wandering the desert, Danny Etling might be the perfect guy for that. I mean, let's just put it out there.
Barely a draftable prospect for a lot of people. I mean, LSU quarterbacks, the track record in the NFL is it's about the same as the track record in college football, I suppose.
That's pretty, people didn't know outside of like the craziest among us how good Odell Beckham was because he was playing in an LSU offense. I mean, you might as well go to like Georgia Tech and play in a triple option. You might as well be a wide receiver at Navy, given what LSU does offensively and the quarterback play that they get. And Etling, maybe he'll stun us all, but I'm not holding out hope.
Well, if anyone knows about whether or not a quarterback is going to, you know, surprise us and then make an NFL career, it is Mark Schofield, former college quarterback himself, one of the foremost quarterback experts when it comes to the NFL draft, and pretty much anywhere you can find on Twitter. You can find his quarterback work and general NFL coverage at Inside the Pylon and Pro Football Weekly, and you can hear him all the time on Locked On Patriots here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Follow him on Twitter if you haven't done it already from the last time he was on the show. What are you doing? You're wasting your time. You're not even using Twitter correctly. Follow him on Twitter at Mark Schofield. Again, that's S-C-H-O-F-I-E-L-D. Mark, your analysis, as always, was phenomenal, and I thank you for coming back on Locked On Bears.
It's always a blast to be with you, buddy. Are you going to be at Big Ten Media Days this year? Are you going?
You know, I haven't decided for sure, but I'm leaning against it. I am.
Yeah, I'm probably not going, but I mean, I still much love you bringing me lunch that day, my friend. I will always remember that. I will take that to my grave. It was quite the gesture.
Yeah, well, I'm always happy to help out a friend, and you return the favor by coming on my podcast, so we're even. Consider it even.
Fantastic, buddy. Always great to be with you, my friend.
Thanks again to Mark Schofield of Locked On Patriots for joining us on the podcast today. Mark and I always have a great time doing these episodes. You've heard him on the podcast before. I'm sure he will be back on again before too long. So make sure you hit that subscribe button so you keep up with every episode of Locked On Bears. As we get closer to training camp here in the coming weeks, we're going to be stepping it back up a little bit, getting some more Bears talk your way, even going beyond the schedule preview. We're still going to get through all the Bears opponents from this year. Still have all the NFC North teams to get through, and we got to get through the rest of the AFC North because the Bears play them back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back. Is that four? Back-to-back-to-back-to-back this year. So we'll keep chugging through there, and we'll get into some training camp previews here as July rolls around, and we will just keep the Chicago Bears talk coming your way. There's more of it on Twitter, at my personal Twitter, at CoxSports1. You can keep up with the Bears Wire and the Pro Football Focus and all that good stuff. There's always NFL talk to be had there. We're going to be trying to bring you some little bit different things here, podcast-wise, as we get ready for training camp. Try not to be too predictable or, you know, in the norm here. We keep you entertained and informed, and hopefully these season previews have fallen in line with that and this podcast, and I hope you'll keep it locked here on Locked On Bears and keep doing the one thing you have to do to get through these slow off-season months. I mean, I say it every single podcast. You already know what it is. You already know what I'm going to say. You got to bear down.